Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we listen to a panel discussion that I moderated at the recent Iowa Ideas Conference that was held in Cedar Rapids. This session focused on telemedicine and telemedicine's promise for improving healthcare in a changing rural landscape. It was recorded on September 21st. The panelists for this session include Dr. Tim Sagers of Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids, Dr. Nicholas Moore of the University of Iowa, Dr. Tim Blair of the Van Buren County Hospital, also Eric Einwalter and Kate Klefstad of University of Iowa Healthcare.
As we look out over the 40, 50 of you, I'm just curious, this is not a representative of our population, for sure you're all interested here in healthcare at this conference here. How many of you have received some sort of telemedicine service? Okay, we've got 2, 3 out of 40 or 50. So we are at the beginning of all this, and I think the word was exploding. We're going to look at that, use that word as in a neutral or positive way. But talk a little bit about patient, healthcare provider interaction when we move to telemedicine, when we have that technology between the patient and the healthcare provider. What does it change? Dr. Sagers.
Well, first of all, I would tell the audience, you're all wrong. You've all done telemedicine. We've done telemedicine since we had phones.
All right.
So you all have, you just don't really realize you've been doing that. You've gotten advice, gotten care, answered questions with your provider via phone forever. So in some ways, we've always been doing that. The technology just adds a little different experience, of course.
Okay, but we're calling this a new era. So what is, we've got telephones, so what is the new big thing?
Well, the big thing now is, I think it's the video interaction.
Okay.
And with the advent of easily deployable, high-definition video, it makes the experience fairly real. We do HD video telemedicine through our Rockwell Center. And to get to your question about what's it like and what do patients think, and the customer satisfaction in that clinic is higher than any brick-and-mortar clinic we have. At first, when people sit down in front of the camera and they see a provider on the other end, it's a little different experience, but overwhelmingly, patients like it. The patients that use it again. Our reutilization rate is extremely high. Once people use it, they trust it, they see it's a real person on the other end. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, the experience in some ways from a patient standpoint is better. For instance, the technology we use there, the patient gets to see their exam. So when myself or another telemedicine provider is doing the visit with the patient is seeing what I see on the camera. They see the cameras I see. If they want to listen to their heartbeat and their lungs, they can listen to their heartbeat and lungs. So it's a much more inclusive encounter with the patient. They get to be part of this mystical thing called the physical exam. And so for patients, the acceptance of that has actually been quite high. And I think, you know, telemedicine is exploding. Iowa has lagged behind a little bit in some ways, but we're quickly catching up. And I would argue that the technology got a little ahead of the culture in the beginning. And now people are starting to catch up. And I think there's lots of drivers. There's exposure, physician acceptance has grown. And more importantly, there's some real drivers of utilization, that is financial considerations. So patients are looking for different ways to get health care. So. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Moore, we had the comment there from Dr. Sagers about Iowa. Can you tell us how Iowa places in terms of its advancement in telemedicine, its development here, according to the rest of the country?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we don't have great utilization data nationally, and that's been one of the challenges, but we know that there are sort of epicenters of telehealth growth. And some of those are centered around institutions that have made a commitment to telehealth to provide telehealth in rural hospitals in their region or to put in place mental health networks in their region. And so some examples of this exist. So there's a telehealth program that is outside Iowa but provides some telehealth services in the northwestern corner of the state that has now expanded to 150-some emergency departments over 12 states. Now, 5 years ago, if we had been talking about telehealth, you know, this idea of providing emergency department-based telehealth services across state lines was something that was still challenging. It was something that was still new. But I think that we are getting close to a point where these epicenters of telehealth growth are allowing people to see what the value of telemedicine might be, and it's also allowing us to learn how this ought to be applied. So, you know, in the first generation of telehealth, you know, there were limitations in technology, there were limitations in broadband access, and which made it difficult to deploy, especially in many rural areas. There were limitations on the services that we could provide because we looked at that from the perspective of providers. But I think that as telehealth is being deployed, and as people who are actually doing it, like the other panelists on the stage here are sort of relating, people start to learn in which patients is that beneficial, how can we augment healthcare that's being provided. This isn't a new form of healthcare. The care isn't really changing. What's changing is the way in which patients really are looking to seek care. And you know, the other part of this too is that I think that by and large, people and rural providers are making really reasonable decisions about their own healthcare in terms of access to healthcare, in terms of the time that it takes to get to a provider. So we have oftentimes thought of this as centralized health systems, and that where there is investment, there is growth in telehealth services. But I think that as this continues to advance, as all of us now, you know, go to the internet to buy books and to see movies and all of these other kinds of things, as digital technology permeates the rest of our lives, I think that what we're seeing is that patients and health systems are really just seeing that healthcare can be provided in this way also, and that the technology that we're using isn't novel technology. In most cases, it's technology that we're using for other things in our lives, that this relationship between a provider and a patient hasn't changed dramatically. It's really just being provided in a different way. And so I think that when we talk about telehealth, oftentimes we think of this as being this tide that is changing healthcare, it's changing these relationships, it's changing the businesses in which the business environment in which our healthcare systems function, but really a lot of the fundamental aspects to healthcare haven't changed, and what we're learning is how to incorporate technology to provide those same services more effectively.
It sounds like an ideal would be to, in that patient-provider interaction, have the technology sort of disappear as something that you're even aware of.
Yeah, I think that that's right. I think all of us have gotten really used to, when we have a problem, you know, calling our provider and getting scheduled for an appointment in 2 weeks, and then going and sitting in a waiting room for 3 hours, and then, you know, being coughed on by all the other people in the waiting room, and all of these things that we know is healthcare. And I think that telemedicine, when it's properly applied, really skips part of that. And I think that if we get to a point that we look back, we're going to say, gosh, you know, why would I wait 2 weeks so I can sit in my doctor's waiting room?
Dr. Blair, there at Van Buren County Hospital, you've observed the development of telehealth. What would you say are sort of, when we talk about provider-patient interaction, lessons learned? If I was coming into your hospital to work with your staff at some level doing this, say, this is what we've learned about telehealth. This is very important for patient satisfaction. What would you say to that?
Well, this is the fifth telehealth program I've been involved with. This is the only one that's worked. So I started out a long time ago.
You've got a long view here.
I've got a long view here. But I have been very happy with the telehealth program that is here. My biggest concern was in the 93-year-old lady that I've known forever. We go in there with this iPad, and she looks at me, and I'm thinking, well, what is this?
And this has actually happened, or did you just imagine it?
I was very surprised.
Yeah.
She bought into it as well as the 15-year-old kid that you can't get off of the phone.
Really?
So the elderly people had very good buy-in with the telehealth. They enjoyed being able to talk to the other person. The caveats to that are, a lot of elder people can't hear and can't see well. Mm-hmm. So that's a bit of a problem that we're trying to work around a little bit. And you know, that may be bigger screens, more better hearing adjuncts, things like that. You know, those are things that are very doable.
Kate Klefstad, you wanted to jump in there.
Yeah, you know, to Dr. Blair's point, there's a lot of things that we can learn as we have actual interactions with patients. And we do hear almost immediately that they think it's really almost the same as a face-to-face visit.
Without exception. I know we're going to do a little cheerleading here, but there are no technophobes as patients. You're telling me that.
I don't know. I don't know that I would say that. I'll let Dr. Blair speak to that.
You're grinning, Dr. Blair. There are.
I'm sure there are some.
There are.
But what we've heard from people of all ages is that it feels as though the doctor's in the room.
Okay.
But I think one of the things that's really important to understand is that the hospitalists on our end have taken providing care via telemedicine very seriously, and mm-hmm. they didn't assume it was exactly the same as face-to-face, so they did it very intentionally. The medical director of the virtual hospitalist program trains each of the hospitalists and explains that they will be on an iPad, they will be on a screen, they need to make eye contact with the camera, thank you. So I think that you have to be very intentional as a provider to make sure that you're making that connection, but when you do that, the patient feels it immediately because it's a great physician on the other end. And so they feel that immediately, and they feel as though the physician is in the room, and we have interviews to that effect, several of them, and so that's really encouraging.
Let me remind those who perhaps have just joined us listening, we're at an Iowa Ideas Conference session, Telemedicine and Rural Health, with Kate Klefstad, Eric Einwalter of UI Healthcare, Dr. Nicholas Moore of the University of Iowa, Dr. Tim Sagers of Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids, Dr. Tim Blair of Van Buren County Hospital, talking about these two developments, because rural health is changing. We talked about this. Very interesting to talk about the age of rural Iowa compared to urban Iowa. The average age in the rural areas, over 43 years compared to our cities, about 35 years the average. So this makes sense in that way as well. Are there other comments about specifically about addressing, and we all know as we age, we tend to need more healthcare services, about helping out and providing services for people as they advance in age? Any further comments, Eric?
Yeah, just one thought just from the earlier comments. Age is not necessarily an indicator of acceptance to telehealth. I think typically it's the nature of the patient. Somebody who's skeptical in nature is probably going to be skeptical to telehealth or anything that they encounter. And somebody who's more accepting and progressive in their thoughts for technology, regardless of age, is going to accept telehealth. So that's a great thing to kind of melt away the stereotypes that the older that you are, the less likely that you are to use telehealth.
Just not finding that at all.
No, not really.
It really depends on the individual.
So one place that we have, numerous places, but one service that we have in our telepsych group is geriatric psychiatry. And we have implemented telehealth equipment and our secure software in skilled nursing facilities all throughout eastern Iowa, and that's expanding throughout the state. And so we have geriatric psychiatry appointments for dementia and Alzheimer's. Residents that are part of those facilities that, as you guys can all imagine, are not the easiest patients to transport to the University of Iowa. And so we're able to do psychiatry appointments for those patients with our physicians in Iowa City. And all of those patients being in a skilled nursing facility are advanced in age. And so we have yet to lose anyone in that process. There's definitely an acceptance towards the interaction. The mental state of the patients is at most importance for the interaction that's happening, but there's nothing, given the fact that they're elderly, that means that they can't participate. Mm-hmm. So it's been a great service.
You mentioned mental health there, mental health services there. Broadly speaking, from our panel, are there particular services that lend themselves especially well to telemedicine, telehealth, and others that perhaps, well, we're going to need some more technology, or perhaps we really need that in-person consultation? Kate.
I would just mention one of the great uses of telehealth applications is remote patient monitoring. It works really well for aging populations, people who are dealing with chronic conditions. So the ability for a provider to have kind of tabs on, we'll use diabetes as an example, tabs on blood sugars, almost at all times, and be able to kind of intervene and say, hey, I noticed there was this change. Was there a change on your end? Is there something that we can do? And I think that's really valuable when a patient is has trouble getting out, or if they have maybe transportation issues or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think is really valuable is simple follow-up visits, the ability to have a follow-up from a clinic closer to their home, or hopefully even in the future from home, I think is really, really valuable.
I think
Dr. Sagers,
the technology, it lends itself, I think, best to specialties or care delivery that's either visual or conversational. One of the big ways telemedicine is used, especially on the West Coast, is dermatology. Everywhere in America, there's not enough dermatologists. I mean, here in Cedar Rapids, we wait 6 months to see a dermatologist. There just aren't enough of them made every year. Out there, at Kaiser and some of the big health systems, up to 80% of their dermatology visits are video-driven. I mean, they're peer image transfers. So instead of driving somewhere to see a dermatologist, you send them a lesion. It makes sense. It's a visual specialty. They look at things. And obviously conversational things, and people talk a lot about telepsychiatry and counseling services and that kind of stuff. But if you think about it, most of healthcare is conversational. I mean, I'm a clinician. When I see patients in my clinic, most of what I do is not with a stethoscope or a tool. It's just my mouth. I'm just talking and listening. Right. And so there's really good work done around this, looking at how much of what we do every day in healthcare can be delivered via the technology, via telemedicine. It's thought to be upwards of 75% of all primary care, urgent care, and ER medicine could be delivered via the technology if it's delivered the right way.
Well, tell us right now, does anybody have any figures about what it is? I'm reminded of the advent of sort of online buying of products, okay, rather than going brick and mortar. If we can look at that, I mean, there was a point in which it was a very small fraction of retail sales. Are we at that point here that we're still a very small fraction of telemedicine, and we can look toward this blossoming, this huge increase yet to come, Dr. Sagers?
Well, just numerically, if you look in 2013, there are 350,000 direct video visits for telemedicine in this country. Something like that. Mm-hmm. It'll be 7 million next year.
Okay, exponential.
But still, in the terms of global healthcare and healthcare in the United States of America, if you think about the number of outpatient clinical visits around this country, it is still a tiny drop in the bucket.
Okay.
Tiny. And so there's lots of room for growth there.
So I'm getting a picture of the future, perhaps, of healthcare providers going to the office every day and sitting in front of a screen and then taking their breaks, and then coming back to the same room, and their face, their interactions will be with people all around the state or around the country. Nicholas Moore, Dr. Moore.
Yeah, so this is being done right now in critical care, and there are a number of big organizations who are providing remote monitoring of patients who are critically ill in other hospitals. There are centers that employ hundreds of physicians who go to offices every day and don't have any patients there, but monitor intensive care unit patients in other states throughout the country. And I think that was one of the early applications, and it was sort of relatively easy to do from a technology perspective because these were all intensive care unit beds that weren't moving, that didn't have local intensivists, so that primary care physicians and hospitalists could provide critical care services in their own communities. And I think that was one of the ways in which the technology was really leveraged to be able to provide that care, because there was a lot of data, number one. Number two, most of the care that was being provided was not procedural care, it was really cognitive care. Number three, the information that could be transmitted by telehealth really lended itself well to digitization. So you could see, you know, rhythm strips on cardiac monitors. You could see the trend of blood pressure. You could see really most of the data that an in-house critical care physician was able to see using the camera. And so that was one area where there was a lot of expansion. One of the questions has been how that has influenced quality of care utilization. Is this duplication of care, or is this providing new care that wasn't previously being delivered? Does that avoid interhospital transfer? What does that do to regionalization, which has been a movement in healthcare really over the last 30 years as patients are being increasingly hospitalized in large centers rather than rural hospitals? So I think that was one area where it grew relatively rapidly. Other areas, though, so in emergency medicine, the early application of telehealth was not adopted so quickly. And one of the reasons, I think, and I think what we see in our research, was that the patients that were targeted were patients who had procedural problems where the technology was not used often. Even in high-functioning networks, the consultation rate was somewhere around 2 to 3%, and in many networks it was much lower than that. And so people didn't have the same comfort with the technology that they had in critical care applications. So this seems to be a technology that applies well to specialty care, to care that is not procedural but rather cognitive, where that interaction, that communication is a big part of the care that's provided. And I think that one of the things that we're learning is that telehealth is not a one-size-fits-all. It mm-hmm. doesn't apply to every problem. It doesn't apply to every specialty. But it's something that when it's applied wisely, and I think we're learning how to do that, it can really improve access to care.
Discussing telemedicine and rural health at the Iowa Ideas Conference in Cedar Rapids. We need, before we go to any audience questions here, let's talk, and you mentioned it briefly before, let's talk about costs, because we know especially rural hospitals under very tight budget constraints right now. How does this fit into that context from Van Buren County, Dr. Blair? What does it do to costs and getting these procedures and services paid for?
Well, being a clinician, I don't have a lot of information on that part. My CEO would be the person to ask that. I don't know if
Kate, Kate is ready to jump in there.
Yeah, I can speak to how it works with Van Buren County Hospital. So before we provided the virtual hospitalist service to them, they were paying for providers to come in to help cover, and they would pay for a full FTE, we would say, so a body to be there around the clock. And they have, you know, maybe a couple patients a day. And so we're able to provide the University of Iowa hospitalist coverage, so great high quality coverage, but at a fraction that makes sense for their patient population.
You don't have to transport a person physically there.
Yep.
And then there's really no waste time. When they're done seeing their patients, they turn off the video stream.
Yeah, exactly. So we're able to say you're about an X percent of an FTE, and then they get great quality coverage, but just kind of custom for their patient population. Mm-hmm.
After a short break, we continue with this discussion at the recent Iowa Ideas Conference in Cedar Rapids. It was a discussion focusing on telemedicine and rural health care. The panelists included Dr. Tim Sagers of Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids, Dr. Tim Blair of Van Buren County Hospital, Dr. Nicholas Moore of the University of Iowa, also Kate Klefstad and Eric Einwalter of UI Healthcare. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Let's get back to that recent panel discussion that I moderated at the Iowa Ideas Conference in Cedar Rapids. It focused on telemedicine, especially in a rural setting. It included Dr. Tim Sagers of Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids, Dr. Nicholas Moore of the University of Iowa, Dr. Tim Blair of Van Buren County Hospital, also Kate Klefstad and Eric Einwalter of UI Healthcare.
Dr. Blair.
The other thing about rural practice is when I started practice, I did ER, OB, covered inpatient, did clinic, all of that. That's not the way we do it now. Somebody's covering the ER, somebody's doing inpatient hospitalist, and somebody does the clinic, so it's kind of siloed. But, and we use ACPs or nurse practitioners, PAs, to do some of that coverage, which in our hospital policy is a physician has to be backup. The physicians that we have doing clinic that don't do the inpatient work quite so much were the ones that had to do that backup. And when you have two physicians that are trading call all the time to cover all of that, that makes it even less appealing to dural practice, which is very difficult to, you know, recruit and retain physicians anyway. So by taking them out of that mix, using the hospitalists at the university as that backup, that's taken a lot of load off of them, made their life happier, which makes us happier. And you know, that is one great thing that has occurred from this the telehealth program. It takes that pressure off some of the local physicians.
Mm-hmm. From Dr. Blair to Dr. Moore.
Yeah, the other thing I think we can ask ourselves is, do we have enough inpatient capacity in Iowa? So if you're sitting at the university, there's a good chance that if you're admitted to the hospital and you come from a rural area, you're going to be come to the emergency department, and you may wait 6 to 12 hours for an inpatient bed because the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics is virtually always full. In Iowa, though, we have 122 hospitals. 82 of those are critical access hospitals, hospitals with 25 beds, many of which have underutilized inpatient capacity. So we have hospitals in Iowa that have open beds. We have other hospitals in Iowa that are busting at the seams. And some of the challenge for that is being able to provide that specialty care in other places. And so I think that one of the promises of telehealth is that instead of just continuing to build capacity in large regional centers, not just the university, but other large centers throughout Iowa, that is one possibility that we can better utilize the capacity that we have in the state to provide healthcare to people, especially in rural Iowa.
Let's talk a little bit about the legal framework in which you work. What could our lawmakers here in Iowa or other states do that could improve telemedicine or perhaps make it expand in a good way more quickly? Dr. Sagers.
Thinking about it from a system and a provider, a direct provider standpoint, certainly one of the biggest challenges and why physicians and systems have not jumped into telemedicine more aggressively is reimbursement. Iowa does not have a reimbursement parity law for private payers, meaning if I see somebody for